Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of Fire Emblem. What? What's up, guys? Bet you didn't expect the second season of this. I am Blaze.
And I am Shu. A new face. Here on the podcast. I know last season you had Ryoku there quite a bit, right? Did you have anybody else?
It was mostly just me and Ryoku. I did a couple episodes by myself, a couple with Ryoku. Fun times overall. Solid reaction. The season was cut a little bit short, admittedly. But we're back for more. It's Fire Emblem. There's always stuff to talk about with Fire Emblem.
Well, you know, that's debatable. But, yeah, no, we just kind of decided, we thought that we had a little bit more to say regarding the series, I suppose. So, that's why we're doing this second season of Fire Emblem. What?
You mean Fire Emblem? What?
I think we should change the name.
We probably will think about that. If anyone has any suggestions on a new name, just drop a comment, or you can also spam my email, blazer@epitron.net. But let's
start that already.
There are a lot of Fire Emblem games, let's be honest. If you want to get really technical, we're on Fire Emblem 14. There's Wise, but they included the Berwick Saga, or no, was it the Berwick Saga?
No, it was Terror Ring Saga.
No, they didn't.
They included,
I think it was the Berwick Saga, they included that as apparently a game, so they consider Awakening the 14th game.
That's the most retarded thing I've ever heard.
I know. Everyone calls it Fire Emblem 13, except for the official people for some inexplicable reason.
Who are the official people?
These are like the Japanese developers of Nintendo.
Oh, look, shit, man.
I swear this is true, because I read in Iwata Asked, and they were like, yeah, dude, there was this this game series for the satellite, and that's actually, like, Fire Emblem, like, 4 or 5, and everything we know is actually a lie. So, the current Fire Emblem 14, I'm like, okay, sure, we'll buy it. With that said, we pretty much have the older games, Japanese games, Fire Emblem 1 to, like, 5.
Six was only in Japan as well.
True, but it was kind of in the GBA era. It did translated unofficially, as many people know. A lot of people have had a chance to play it.
Oh yeah.
So, game overall.
I kind of wanted to talk about the differences and just the tone of the plot between the what I guess you'd call it the pre-GBA era. And I mean, generally, I don't know if you play these games, you realize that the plot lines in, especially in Fire Emblem 4 and 5, they're much darker and a lot more deep compared to the later games.
Good child incest all the way.
Oh, yeah. That's a big part of it. The thing is, like, Fire Emblem 4, everybody was related to everybody, so everything was really dramatic. But that's the thing, like, remember, when you were playing these games, you always got the impression that there was a lot going on everywhere. Like, beyond what your group was doing, there was just interesting shit happening all over the place. You had a little bit of that in Sacred Stones, but I think for the most part, the translated games and Sealed Sword from 6, they didn't really have that feel, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the later games felt more, a little bit centered and focused. For instance, you know, if there's a war, it was just kind of focused on, you know, the one group as the war progresses. And you didn't really get the impression that there was a lot of other, like, politics and other groups going on. Whereas with FE4 and FE5, if you really want to get into it, technically FE5 takes place during the middle of FE4. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I know, you're right. It covers...
Am I wrong?
Yeah, it's in between the first generation and second generation.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, if you want to, just based off of that, you can already tell that if they made a game that takes place in the middle of another game, that just shows, like, how relatively deep the plot is.
Oh, yeah.
There's, like, a whole other game while this game is happening. It shows that it's not just focused on one hero and one, like, set of events in one place. The world's actually a lot bigger than that. And the older games, though I'll admit I haven't been Fire Emblem 4, they definitely did give a little bit more of that impression. So I'd have to give a little bit of props on the execution of that to the original developers.
I remember one. I think it was somewhere on the forums. I don't remember who mentioned it, but they mentioned that when Fire Emblem 4, you actually kind of realize where you are on the world map. I think with a lot of the later games, the world map locations were just sort of irrelevant to a lot of people. It didn't really burn in anybody's mind, but they always showed it in Fire Emblem 4, and there were a lot of landmarks.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always felt like it was almost a little bit overwhelming. There were just so many places that I kind of had a hard time keeping up between all the names and, like, you know, strategic war places and fortresses and other landmarks. And I was just like, and this is only, like, one quarter of the world? Like, that's, like,
It's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts. I know that, I mean, I don't know about you, but personally, I would like for the developers to revisit that, I mean, I guess, writing philosophy of trying to go with a deeper plot with a lot more going on, as opposed to, you know, even the newest game, Awakening. I remember you mentioned before that it's very centered around the characters that you're playing as.
Right, exactly. For one, you play as Crom and his group pretty much the entire game. And as you go along, it's more or less focused around this kind of war that you're fighting. I mean, you might be fighting with a slightly different group, but it's pretty black and white. You're just like all the action is happening wherever you are. It's very rare that there's other action happening, other stuff. There's a little bit early game, I believe, what's her name, gets attacked. There's a Pegasus squad that gets attacked. It's actually the squad that Cordelia was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I
mean, you did have that, like, one scene where it's like, oh, my God, like, shit's going down in another place. Like, we got a haul ass over there. Uh-huh. But, like, aside from that, it was relatively straightforward. Like, you didn't really get the impression that there was, like, a lot of different things happening. Like, there was a lot of different countries with different politics and conspiracies and other things. And, I mean, it is an RPG, so while you can say it's not really necessary to have such a deep plot, at the same time, I do kind of expect a little bit more from that. And it would really help, bring out a little bit more color from the game. I mean, you can just, from the people who've played FE4 and FE5, a lot of people praise it. And, I mean, even now, some people will probably still insist that games like, you know, FE4 and FE5 were better than FE13 just because they were, you know, had deeper plots or were slightly executed better or whatever. And, I mean, to each their own, but that just says a little bit about, you know, how this style appeals to some people. And, you know, if they bring in that style, I doubt anyone's going to complain about a better story, right?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I guess there's the people that, they get confused about it. I guess that a weaker plot appeals to somebody that probably doesn't read a lot or watch a whole lot of anything. All they do is play, I don't know, Tetris. And generally, these people probably, they don't want to get overwhelmed. They don't want to overwhelm anybody.
Sorry about that lack of education.
Yeah, well, you know. but I remember there was one instance in Fire Emblem Awakening where Virion, he said that he had some land that was being fucked up. And they didn't really touch on that after mentioning it once, right?
No, pretty much this is what happened. He came in after this very short time skip where no one actually changed appearances. But pretty much there was a time skip. Crom had a kid. And Virion comes in and he's like, oh my god, my land got taken over, and he brings his maid or whatever, Cherish, and it's like, oh, okay, let's go do something about it, and like, you never actually get to really visit his land, you never really get the feeling that there was, like, I would have liked something deeper, like, for instance, like, whoever was there, for instance, like, you would think they wouldn't just, like, get taken over, and it's like, oh, it's just that simple, there would be some kind of rebellion, there would be some kind of resistance. You know, there has to be some kind of, I mean, you don't just take over place and it's like, oh, okay, you're part of us now. Like, oh, okay, we'll submit to your every whim, new king, Wolhart. Wolhart, sorry. I mean, it's just not that simple. You have to kind of go in a little bit deeper. You can't just say, oh, this land was taken over. Oh, generic landmark. Like, come on. I would have liked to see a little bit more than that. Plus, it would have developed Virion's backstory a little bit. You know, in Fire Emblem Awakening, it was less about backstories and more about character interactions. And I know some people didn't like that in Awakening. they prefer the supports that, you know, built on the backstories, and they like little subplots, like with Fire Emblem 7, you had, you know, Raven's Revenge against Ostia, and, you know, Fire Emblem 8, you had like, you know, Valtor and Cormag, you know, there's, or not Valtor and Cormag, what's his name, Cormag and Glenn, you know, big brothers, and, you know, one of them being traitors, and if you played Erika's, or Erica, however you want to pronounce it, if you played her mode, you got to see Glenn die, and, you know, you had little subplots. And Matthew Yates' plot wasn't even that impressive, but still, it had a little bit more than, you know, Awakening.
More substance, yeah. No, I mean, it definitely, like, when you create backstories for these characters and, like, they have their own ambitions going, that also contributes to the feeling of more going on in a plot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, exactly, like, especially you mentioned Revan's rebellion. I mean, that was, he's rebelling against the character that you play as.
No,
which is really interesting. It's definitely like a shade of gray kind of thing.
Yeah, dude. There's conflict within the group. Whereas in Awakening, like I don't mean to bash Awakening. I love the Awakening, but everyone meshes so well. They all get along together so well. They get along perfect. Like no one really has conflicting interests except for maybe Tharja. Tharja conflicts with everyone.
She was just crazy.
Who supports with the Avatar because she stalks the Avatar. And Cordelia conflicts with anyone who supports with Krom because she stalks Krom. But like romance aside, there's no real, you know, internal conflict. There's no real, you know, alternate ambitions. Like Hector's mode, FE7, that actually added a lot to the plot with Hector. It really developed Hector because he had to.
I mean,
Elliewood didn't really notice as much, but, you know, Hector had this whole subplot with other, you know, other being sick and other ultimately, you know, dying. And, you know, Hector's like, oh, man, other died. Now I have to take over. But first I got to take care of this, you know. And I always, this one line got to me in Fire Emblem 7. And I hope you don't mind me taking over for a little bit. But there's this line in Fire Emblem 7 when you have Hector fight Nurgle. Spoiler alert. Nurgle's pretty much like, Nurgle's pretty much like, if it was just Elliewood, like, this wouldn't be a game. Like, this wouldn't be a fight. Like, I would have been successful, and there'd be no, like, you know, there'd be no contest, essentially. But he said it was because of Hector. Like pretty much Hector was, you know, the pain in his ass. And, you know, that kind of got to me, because people never really saw Elliewood as, like, you know, a great, you know, leader or a bad
actor. Oh, I know, I didn't.
I mean, yeah, a lot of people kind of thought he was a little bit of a pussy. You know, so that kind of got to me, because it was like, you know, like Hector's, you know, supporting Elliewood, but Hector had his own problems, and, you know, Elliewood was a little bit oblivious, like, he kind of spent a little bit too much, you know, crying with Albert, over Albert, and I don't know. I just found it a little bit more interesting, you know, that things weren't so straightforward, and everyone was getting along perfectly, and, you know, having no character development, and...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I go ahead.
Get on, you go ahead.
Well, I mean, I was, I know I like to, I have a hobby of mine that's, kind of writing plot concepts for hacks, even though I don't actually know how to hack and I don't really have a desire to learn. But, an idea I came up with, is kind of based on, like, the, Three Kingdoms era of China, where there's this vast empire and a series of bad rulers in the dynasty result in a peasant rebellion and in a failed military coup after that. But in the wake of that, the entire nation sort of breaks up, and all the various landed lords are fighting each other, and eventually it shakes out to where there's three large factions that own pretty much all the land of this nation. And most of the game kind of centers around the changing alliances and political intrigue that go on between these three nations. And I was thinking that it would kind of be released in like a three-part hack where you play as each one of these factions, and you end up actually fighting against the characters that you would play as in another, the alternate version of the game, so to speak.
Yeah, dude, I would love a twist like that in one of the newer Fire Emblems, you know, something that kind of, you know, just shakes the whole foundation. I mean, you know, Fire Emblem games are solid overall, but to make that really epic game, you kind of do have to take risk, you know, with the plot and with other aspects. And yet, you know, making such a story where there's, you know, like three intertwining plots and, you know, they're all, you know, canon to some extent, you know, they all make sense pretty much. you know, that is difficult. It does take more effort on the story writers, but, you know, it's their job. It's up to them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I would love to see that. And it's kind of unfortunate that, you know, a lot of people with good ideas, you know, can never put them into hacks, because hacking is just kind of a pain in the ass. I mean, I've been hacking for forever. There's still stuff I don't know how to do. I still get frustrated. You know, hacking can only do so much. I mean, it really does take a lot of, you know, time and effort. I have a lot of respect for, you know, the people who, you know, still hack after a lot of time, myself excluded. I don't have any respect for myself. but yeah, you know, I'd love to see, you know, a whole new twist on the Fire Emblem with, you know, something a little bit more, I guess, plot-centered. Not even plot-centered. I mean, obviously, it's a Fire Emblem game. We're also playing it for the game. But just something with a little bit more diversity in the plot, a little bit more depth. That's all.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of what contributes to the kind of change, I guess, in, you know, from darker, deeper plots to kind of a cut-and-dry, black-and-white sort of writing philosophy is, you know, the original creator of Fire Emblem, Shozo Kaga, who left and he created the Terrain Saga. He left Nintendo and created Terrain Saga. And since he's not really behind it, and around when he left is when the GBA era started, and they kind of, you know, that's when the plot started changing, so.
Yeah, it definitely did shift dimensions a little bit. And I mean, you know, we're talking about this potential for a new game, but, you know, the next game, Fire Emblem game coming up is, you know, Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem. And, I mean, Shin Megami Tensei kind of does have deeper, darker plots. And it does, in fact, have different endings in its games. So, for instance, for those who've played the latest Shin Megami Tensei 4, it has, like, a law route, a chaos route, and a neutral route, I believe, or ending or something. Mm-hmm. So it has a lot of choices, and unlike Awakening, which also had choices, those choices matter a little bit. In Awakening, the only choices that really affected more than dialogue were, I mean, the choices for creating the avatar. And at the very end, there's a choice that changes the ending a little bit. But, I mean, the choices overall weren't that, you know, effective. It was just kind of like, oh, let's just, you know, throw in some random stuff to make things more interesting for the player.
And, you know, when I first got to that point, when you made that, you know, that initial choice in that one country, I was actually really really impressed, because I like games that kind of have like a hard choice aspect to it. It kind of gets you a little bit more invested into the game, I think, and I thought that would be a major step forward towards, like, you know, better plot writing in the series. But yeah. I mean, they didn't really go into that as much as I thought they would. They were just, you know, it was just very few choices.
Yeah, no, it was a great idea. And for those who haven't played Awakening, I mean, we're probably going to throw in a little bit of spoiler here, but it's a scene early on in the game, in Plagia, I believe he's talking about, where a certain character dies. And there's a choice, and it's kind of like both choices are relatively bad. It was a great idea, but they didn't really follow up with it. They're just like, this is choice, and like either way, like it doesn't really matter what you do, so you might as well just like do any mini mini mo and like pick whatever the hell you want, because like it actually doesn't matter. With Shin Megami Tensei was, as I was saying, it is a little bit different. Your choices really do matter. They kind of, you know, accumulate, the dialogue changes, etc. So with this Shin Megami Tensei X Fire Emblem game, you know, if they actually, like, put effort into making a plot and they don't just make it, like, a boring crossover game where it's like, oh, dimension travel, let's just have everyone, you know, come together in the same dimension and fight the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And if they actually try and throw in a plot, I can see a lot of potential for this, because, you know, between, you know, Shin Megami Tensei's, you know, darker plot aspects and Fire Emblem's, you know, war aspects and, you know, just, you know, army bonding and other such aspects, I could definitely see a very solid plot. And I do believe that we've heard SMTX FE will be an RPG. It won't be a fighting game. But yeah, I just like to see something a little bit deeper than perhaps a game like Project Cross Zone. sequels played at. It's a crossover with a lot of different franchise characters, like Capcom, Tails characters, Namco Bandai. There's too many. I mean, I can't list. I can't even begin to list. There's a lot of characters from there. But overall, it's just like everyone just comes together and they fight the bad guys. That's literally the plot. So I would just like to see a little bit more from SMTX Epi on this, because I know if they actually put in the effort, they could definitely mesh the two.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned the Project X Zone and how there wasn't a super crazy plot with that. Another example of that is Final Fantasy Dissidia. And, I mean, Final Fantasy is supposed to be known for having really interesting stories. And I find it a little bit ironic how when you put all of those characters together into one game, it doesn't shake out to be that interesting.
From a story standpoint. No, I mean, it's nice to see your favorite characters and all, but, you know, the reason why you truly liked the games in the first place was because those characters were in this setting that was really interesting and it made out to be a good game.
Yeah.
You didn't like the characters, well, I guess maybe you did, but for most people, you didn't just like the characters because they looked cool and had cool voice actors. Maybe you did if you're, you know, really, but usually it's a mixture of everything. So when you kind of throw out, you know, the backstories, when you just kind of, you know, simplify all the characters and, you know, they seem to fall into these archetypes where they can easily mesh with the other characters, it's like, you don't really, you know, enjoy the characters for the same reasons that you enjoyed them to start with.
Right. Well, we're coming up on time here, so we should wrap this up. Thanks for listening, guys. We will catch you later in another episode. I am Shu.
And I'm Blazer, and you should totally leave a comment either on the YouTube video that we will be posting this on YouTube or on the forums or wherever you see fit. That we post this. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you'd like to hear about next time. We'll be happy to talk about almost anything. Fire Emblem related, though. Roughly Fire Emblem related. We're willing to go a little bit out of our
box. Oh, yeah. All right, well, I'll catch you later, guys.
Yep, absolutely.